people ask all the time, like what things did you learn at university that you carry through? And to be completely honest, there's not loads of things that you carry through into professional work, because you mm-hmm. learn so much in studios, like their yeah. own workflows and all these different things. I mean, firstly, I learned how to use Maya, sure, at university. Yeah. But the main thing that I learned was that I really wanted to do game art and mm-hmm. to work in the CG industry, yeah. and that doing it could be fun, and that it was an opportunity to have a enjoyable work life. I mean, it's still a 9-to-5. Sometimes it's yeah. more than a 9-to-5, but it's not a 9-to-5. Yeah, I started at university. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I managed to get a job in a really big studio. Yeah. And it was probably the worst experience of my life. I think Unreal 5, what we can see from it so far, they're already closing that gap. In terms of mesh complexity, they seem to be solving that already. Like, you can have hundreds and thousands of polygons on a mesh now. And that wasn't possible in Unreal 4. Not in the way that you can have like crazy displacement on a wall in yeah. pre-rendered projects. And that's something that I learned moving into pre-rendered when I went to Axis, was just like, whoa, you guys just press the buttons and then yeah. the polys just go high. I had always thought about like, yeah, I'm the only black guy in this studio
yeah.
many times. Okay. And every yeah. time it's just a natural thing, right? You go to yeah. a studio and you're like, there's maybe like two other people here that yeah. are black too. And I'm probably going to never work with either of them.
Hi, and welcome to the VFX Artist Podcast. On today's episode, I have Floyd Bulinji, a UK environment artist for the gaming and VFX industry. During today's discussion, I'm looking to find out more about Floyd's journey into the industry, as well as to discuss a bit more about diversity in the industry. I hope you enjoy the show. I'm happy to have you on. Just because I've been wanting to chat to you for some time. I think just because about a month ago, one of my mates in industry, shout out to Jermaine Rajas, he forwarded me one of your posts about, I think it was there was a black student emailing you asking you about what it was like, or what it's like being a person of color in the industry.
Yeah.
And and then that hit home, just because it was exactly that reason why Jermaine mentioned you to me, because mm-hmm. you were, in his own words, like the second black supervisor he's seen in the UK. And yeah. I could relate and agree, because for me, up until recently, I had never come across a black or mixed race supervisor in this industry. So today I just really wanted to first of all find out a bit more about your journey into in the industry and learn more about what you do and how you came about doing what you do. But okay. then secondly, hoping to touch on a bit about this dilemma and the lack of diversity, or seemingly lack of diversity in the industry. So with that said, yeah, welcome to the show. And if that's okay, could you just tell us who you are and then what you do?
Okay, sweet. Firstly, yeah, thank you for having me on.
Yeah,
it's really cool to do. Mm-hmm. So my name's Floyd Bulinji. I am currently just an artist again. I've decided to just, while I still have the years to be able to do it, just go yeah. back to just doing artwork for a little while. But yeah. I was previously a real-time CG supervisor at Axis. Mm-hmm. I guess, do you want me to, should I go through my career just from?
Tell us about, yeah.
So, I went to the University of Hertfordshire, to start with, to learn. Yeah. I did a game art course there. It's a really good university. I would highly recommend it if people are able to. Mm-hmm. I didn't know at the time that it was such a good university. It was just one that was close. I'm from Luton. So it was like, okay. Hertfordshire is like the one town away. So it yeah. meant I could still be near my family and friends yeah. while still be like far enough away to have fun and be in my own kind of little circle and do yeah. my own sort of thing at university. Yeah. But it turned out that Hertfordshire University now is one of the best universities the best in the country and one of the best in the world for yeah. game art. So I lucked out, I think, really.
Yeah.
I had a great time there. I think the main thing that university taught me, people ask all the time, like what things did you learn at university that you carry through? And to be completely honest, there's not loads of things that you carry through into professional work, because you mm-hmm. learn so much in studios, like their own workflows and all these different things. I mean, firstly, I learned how to use Maya, sure, at university. But the main thing that I learned was that I really wanted to do game art and to work in the CG industry, and that doing it could be fun, and that it was an opportunity to have a enjoyable work life. I mean, it's still a 9-to-5. Sometimes it's more than a 9-to-5, but it's not a 9-to-5. It's you do artwork. It's like a passion that you get to continue out into your day to day. So, I started at university. And then after that, I'd managed to get a job in a really big studio. And it was probably the worst experience of my life working in that studio. And I left there thinking, I was there for about 6 or 7 months. And I thought, if this is what the industry is like, and I try it again and go somewhere else in exactly the same thing, I don't know if this is what I will want to do, just because of the way that the studio was run, the way that the people felt that worked there. It was a terrible experience. And then after that, me and three of my friends kind of knuckled down and pushed our portfolios, and we all managed to get a job at Rare, all three of us. So we moved out to just by Birmingham to work at Rare, and completely changed my perspective on working in the games industry. It is to this day still one of the best places I've worked. I would highly recommend people working there. It's a really nice environment. I got to do all of the things that I thought I was going to get to do as an environment artist, even though at the time I was like just a junior. It was a really collaborative workspace. Like the leads wanted to listen to what you had to say when they gave you a task. Like they'd give you a task and then they'd ask you how you were going to approach this. How would you like to approach? What kind of things would you do here? How can we push this image? How can we do that? It wasn't just like, here's a thing, do it. This is your timeline. They'd even let us at points in time. I mean, I would pretty much just come out of university. I was about a year out of university, and they were allowing me to do concepts of my own, the areas I was going to work on, just to show them that I could push things and come up with ideas, which was amazing for me at the time. So that completely changed my perspective on working in the games industry. So I was just working a contract position there. They like ramp up and then ramp back down, or they did at the time anyway. So I left Rare. I think I probably, had it been a full-time role, I probably maybe even still be there today. Who knows? But after that, I thought it would be cool to get into doing mobile games and seeing what that kind of part of the industry was like. So at Rare, I got to work on AAA, or pretty much AAA, I suppose. It was very stylized, but it was pretty much AAA. So I moved to a mobile game studio to work on mobile games, see how that went. And I enjoyed it for a little while. We moved out to Malta. We were in Malta working.
All right.
And that's one thing also that I would say. Nice. Anyone interested in getting into this industry, you can work and live anywhere. Like there's studios all over the place, and if you're good enough and you're passionate enough, people will hire you, and you'll be able to move all over the world. There's studios everywhere. So me and my partner moved out to Malta. We lived there for I think maybe 2.5, nearly 3 years. Nice. And I kind of got to the end of working in mobile games, and I started getting that AAA hunger. And I was like, oh, I need to work on something that has more than 200 polygons. So I kind of buckled down and pushed my portfolio again and managed to get a job at Splash Damage, working on the Gears of War franchise. And I'd say Splash Damage is probably the place where I improved most as an artist, and I like really came into my own and started working out what my style was and what sort of things I liked the most, just because of the people that worked there. I would say mostly I worked with some amazing artists, some people that I still speak to today. Most of my friend group really are still people that I met at Splash Damage. It's a great place to work as well, but I was just surrounded by people that really cared about making art and games. And it's really liberating when you're in an environment like that, because anything goes, right? You can, I would show them personal work and people would comment on it, critique it. Like I'd have concept artists do paint overs of things, and I wouldn't need to like go knocking on someone's door and be like, hey, could you please do this for me? Like I'd show something and people would be like, oh, these are the things that we can do. Let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. And it really helps you improve, and it strips back that like ego about your work. Because these people are so much better than you, or they're as good as you, but in different ways. Like there's always things you can learn from all these people. So that was really good. And I think that taught me most how to also, I'd say probably the first studio I worked at, the one that went terribly, that one and this one taught me most how to work with juniors and work with yeah, just newer, younger artists and in how it is that you should treat them and yeah, how it is that you grow talent and create a space where, I mean, I don't want to say a safe space, but it is in a way, it's a safe space, right? It's a place where nothing is wrong and everything can be improved in some way. So yeah, that was my time at Splash Damage. That was awesome. And then me and my partner had a kid. And she's from Scotland. So I started looking around at what was going on in Scotland and managed to get a job at Axis, which was awesome. And that's where I got into kind of the VFX and animation industry. Okay. And it's a completely different kettle of fish. It's amazing. It's so good working in, in the animation and VFX, but it's like it's a different world, man. The approach to creating scenes and cinematics and stuff is completely different. So I learned a lot there. And that's where I ended up becoming a CG Soup. I started as a senior, became a lead. And then they were trying to grow their real-time team. And because I had expertise in real time before working in games is how I ended up becoming a CG Soup there. I would say probably in terms of some of the other CG Soups that probably exist in the world, I'm one of the less experienced, but I was more experienced at creating real-time or doing real-time projects, which is what allowed me to move into that role fairly easily. So while I was there, I learned a lot about just like VFX pipeline, animation pipelines. Then we started growing the real-time department. So I moved over to that and started doing more the things that I was doing previously, but for cinematics rather than for like creating games. Or we started kind of facilitating games, but creating cinematics for them to run inside their game. So still a very cinematic workflow. But that's the stuff I did there. And then I kind of thought after being there for 3 years that I've got only so many opportunities to just do art for work for a while, because at some point, right, I'm going to need to go back to souping for the money. And because it's nice managing teams. I do love it. It's awesome. Just taking a wider lens at the project and making sure that everyone that's working has what they need to be able to bring things through and to help everyone as a whole push the quality bar. But I thought I've only got so many more opportunities just to focus on doing art every day at work. So I've taken that chance now and we'll see how that goes. Well, that's my story from beginning to end. I hope that wasn't too much of a ramble.
No, it's great. It's amazing. But I'm curious about what inspired or who inspired your interest in the arts,
I suppose I'd say my biggest inspiration into getting into doing game art and working in computer games was playing games, and I'd say the one game that pushed me most in that direction was Half-Life 2. That game made me think this is what I want to do for my career. And then eventually it just ended up being that way. I've never really had any other career drive in my life. So I've been quite lucky in that regard, I suppose. I was always focused from the moment I played it as a kid, because I was quite young at the time. I think I was still in the end of junior school or something like that. And this is all I've ever really wanted to do. I mean, there's always that like, oh, it would be awesome to be an astronaut. But other than that, I've just wanted to do this and make either awesome cinematics that have like really cool emotional drivers and just look amazing, or to work on games that people will remember and love to play. I think, that was one of the main takeaways, I think, for me from Half-Life, was that I thought about it all the time. Like, and I wanted to play it all the time. And even to this day, I think about moments that I had whilst playing that game. I think as an artist, the person who made me want to do 3D art the most was Paul Papera. I don't know if you know who he is. He did lots of sci-fi artwork and lots of like spaceships and really cool stuff, like Space Odyssey kind of stuff. But his work's amazing. Unfortunately, he passed away fairly recently. But his work's amazing. And I guess that was one of my biggest inspirations into doing 3D art.
Amazing. Are you able to explain what the role of an environment artist is?
Yeah. So It's quite wide. When my friends ask me this, I kind of say sometimes I'm like, it's kind of everything but characters and effects and animation. Then I guess some studios are more compartmental, and then other studios, like where I'm working now, there's a smaller team, so it's your role's wider and you do more things. There might be some lighting or whatever in it, but generally it's kind of props and architecture and natural environment, textures, materials for those things. It could be textures and materials for everything, really. And sometimes a little bit of effects, sometimes lighting. It's always good, I think, for an environment artist to know how to light, just for, if not your own personal projects, but just it's really cool to set a tone when you have an environment, and lighting helps do that very well. Especially if you're a junior and you're just starting on, someone's giving you an environment to work on, and you're coming up with all of these ideas are flowing in your mind. Sometimes just getting that lighting in will help solidify what it is that you're trying to ideate. But quite a lot of stuff, I guess, is what it is.
So considering, because you mentioned you were quite lucky into getting into industry straight from university, I'm just wondering, typically, how competitive would it have been to get into the industry had you not been so lucky or like well deserving?
I think it's quite hard now. I think people who have really pushed their portfolio and really focused on what it takes to create something that a recruiter or a lead is going to see and say, well, this person knows what they're doing to a degree enough for me to bring them into the studio and teach them the rest of the things that they're going to need to know. Those people who have done that, I think it's always going to be easier. I think if you've created a portfolio that's kind of mid, it's hitting the notes, but there's no flair on it. There's none of you in it. I think it's crazy competitive. Especially I think in the UK, because we have, well, there are quite a few studios, but there are not loads of like really high end studios. There's loads of mobile studios. And the thing is, as well, is that all of the studios are kind of like in similar areas. So there's like hubs in different places. But yeah, it is quite competitive. I think I found myself lucky because I didn't think that my portfolio was one of the portfolios that I look for now. I feel like my portfolio was, at the time, it was just like run of the mill, somewhere in the middle. And that's because, I mean, I learned my lessons eventually, but it was just because I was still partying at university. And as much as I love doing game art, the party was still the thing that I was most focused on at the time. Which is a shame, but I managed to get my foot in the door, and I can see now, I suppose, why, because the role that I went into first, although it was at a really big studio, was to just pretty much fix collision and all of the things that we automate now. So like to create LODs for things, so different levels of detail as you get closer or further away from an asset, and collision and all of that stuff that Unreal or whatever engine it is you're using auto generates for you now, they were still doing by hand. And they hired me and some other people in to do that job. But as an environment artist coming out of university, I was like, whoa, it's crazy. I can't believe I'm going here. So in hindsight, I know why that I was hired into that position. But I still at the time thought that I was quite lucky to do that.
I'm a bit curious, like, considering, because you've been in games and VFX, which do you prefer the most, and what differentiates it between environments for VFX and games?
I've been thinking about this fairly recently, and I suppose I was thinking about this when I changed job, and I think truthfully I don't have a favorite between the two. I didn't know before moving into the VFX industry and doing cinematics, I didn't know much about it. I just saw pre-rendered cinematics for games and was like, whoa, that's crazy. I would love to work on that at some point. And it turns out that they are just as awesome, but they're so different. So in working in games, I think that working in games is less time pressured for a good long period of time. And then it becomes very time pressured towards the end because there's this massive game that you've got to make and everyone's still working all of the mechanics out and all of the story and all of these things are all being brought together. And then you come to like the last few months and it's like, oh, we're not there yet. We've got to get it in. So then everyone's kind of working really hard to get it in. Some places manage this really well. Some places don't manage this really well. But in my experience, that's how it's been. But in the cinematics industry, it's kind of like smaller projects, intense the whole way through, and then you have a good little break and then another intense project. What I did love about working in at Axis was just that I got to, in a year, the space of a year, work on like five different projects of like blockbuster games. And at the end of the year, I was exhausted mentally and physically, but I've worked on five games that I would never have got to work on. Like, but it takes like 4 years to make a game sometimes, right? That would never have been possible. And I think the focus on the level of detail and quality in VFX and pre-rendered and cinematics is just so much higher. Even in stylized stuff, there are things that people are thinking about that people aren't thinking about in games, just because one, it's not possible, and two, you're going to run through and explode it anyway. But yeah, in games, there's kind of a different take on it, in that they understand that it's not just this 2 minute video that you're going to be watching. It's a whole game that you're going to be playing. So what I enjoy from games is just the integration of things like mechanics and how they change the way that you view the environments. Not having a fixed camera. So in pre-rendered stuff, a lot of the time camera's fixed because there's no player, right? You're a viewer watching it. So the environment is as the environment is, and that's been modeled to camera and made to camera. But in games, there's like this whole 360 exploration of something. If you make an asset, you've got to make that asset in the knowledge that someone's probably going to zoom in on one corner of it and shoot it. So in some ways it's more difficult. But one thing that I did love, I'd say the most about pre-rendered cinematics, was just the story and the things that people do to come up with ways to invoke emotion in the watcher in this like really small space of time. And then how that bleeds into everything from the character, the animation, the visual effects, and the environment that I work on as well. But yeah, two very different things, both have positives. I'm not sure which one I prefer, honestly. Sure. But yeah, I think I'd say working in the cinematics industry is much more intense.
I'm not a gamer, but I've always been a great fan of cinematics, especially growing up and playing Final Fantasy, and the cinematics in Final Fantasy 7 were the ones I played, were just amazing, just incredible. So
they were groundbreaking for the time as well.
I'm just wondering, are you able to mention some of the shows and the games that you've worked on, if they're not too
I could do. I will refresh my mind by using my art station. I think it's probably the best. That's probably the best way to do that. Otherwise I'll miss something off. So there's the last few things that I worked on at Axis I unfortunately still can't talk about. And they annoyingly are the biggest things that I've worked on while I was there. Early on, I guess I'll go through my career, I guess. Early on, when I was at Rare, I worked on like a Kinect sports game, which was it was their last Kinect sports game. But it was their first foray into trying to make it look less like Wii Sports and more like a really fun game. So they pushed the art style there and tried to make this it's quite hard to explain, I suppose. It was I don't know if you saw it, it was the first one where you could scan your body using the Kinect, and then it would create like an avatar of yourself. So that was a cool one. And then after that, I worked on Angry Birds Go, which was a 3D version of Angry Birds. That was when I was in Malta. And then Angry Birds Transformers and something else. And then after that, when I moved to Splash Damage, it was just Gears of War. Gears of War 4, a little bit of Gears of War 5, Gears of War Tactics, which was awesome. That was a strategy version of Gears of War. So it was really interesting trying to take this this aesthetic and design that was made for a third person shooter. It was really like chunky third person shooter where you stood your cameras behind this massive character who's got like huge biceps and stuff. Yeah. And then how we would translate that into a camera that's above and viewing strategically across the map. So that was really interesting. And I love doing that. And I think Gears of War to this day is still always in every personal piece I make. Like everything's a little bit chunky. Everything's a little bit metal. And then after that, when I moved to Axis, it was, just purely cinematics from then. I worked on, strangely, a Gears of War cinematic there as well. Did lots of stuff for Magic the Gathering, which is a trading card game, but they got really heavily into doing cinematics for every time they released a new pack. And some of them have racked up some crazy views on YouTube, but we did a few of those. There were some cool ones. There was War of the Spark, which is an amazing one. If anyone wants to see it, I would go and watch that. Magic the Gathering, War of the Spark. And then we did Throne of Eldraine, which is a, you kind of chase some gingerbread men across a fantasy tabletop. That's a really cool one as well. It was really interesting trying to take the perspective away from a normal sized human character and then put it on like a gingerbread man that's this high and have all of the things on the tabletop, like I don't know, a milk jug or an apple or whatever, be like what would be a building or a car for us. And just changing the perspective there was really, it was really fun. And just pushing that level of detail on those things, like having those little fine hairs and dust motes and stuff. It was fun, really interesting. I did an ad for the famous grouse, which is something that they do quite a lot up here in Axis, because famous grouse is a whiskey from Scotland. So it's just one of those things they do. And then my first CG Soup role, which was working for and with Sumo Digital on Sackboy, what's it called? Sackboy A Big Adventure? Yeah, Sackboy A Big Adventure, which is the new Little Big Planet game where they took Sackboy and tried to make him, although he was the main character before, but Sony wanted to kind of come up with, I think what they were trying to do was make their version of Super Mario, like their Mario, not their version of Super Mario, because the games are very different, but they're like figurehead character for PlayStation. And so they broke him out and gave him his own kind of platforming adventure. And we did all of the story driving cinematics for that. So the main ones that helped push the story forward, there were loads of other small cinematics that Sumo did themselves amazingly. But that was my first CG Super role, was doing that. Which was pretty cool. And that's pretty much as far as I can go.
Nice. I'm just curious about Unreal, just because, I mean, recently it's just blown out, but I'm just wondering how come it's blown out so much recently? And what would you have done in the past that you're doing in Unreal that's like saving you time or just making it much more fun or a bit more intuitive?
Okay, so the things I would have done in the past had we had Unreal was in that first job where I was doing LODs and Collision. Unreal auto generates those stuff for you now. You don't need, and to a really, really high precision. So none of that's necessary anymore. Terribly boring part of working on games doesn't exist anymore. I think it's blown up recently because the gap between what can be done in pre-rendered cinematics and what can be done in games is getting closer and is smaller and smaller all the time. As graphics cards get more powerful and as tech gets more powerful, that gap is just closing. And I think we're getting to a place where studios are really starting to recognize this. The team over at Unreal has recognized this a good while ago, and that's their aim, I think, is to just create this tool that can replace what people are doing with pre-rendering. I mean, you can still, to some degree, pre-render out of Unreal, so you can render from it. But I guess the only setbacks at the moment are that mesh complexity and things like translucency and transparency and all of that stuff that requires like really complex rendering is still going to be done in pre-rendered high-end studios. As soon as Unreal manages to completely close that gap, I don't see why people won't completely be using it. I think Unreal 5, what we can see from it so far, they're already closing that gap. In terms of mesh complexity, they seem to be solving that already. Like, you can have hundreds and thousands of polygons on a mesh now. And that wasn't possible in Unreal 4, not in the way that you can have like crazy displacement on a wall in pre-rendered projects. And that's something that I learned moving into pre-rendered when I went to Axis, was just like, whoa, you guys just press the buttons and then the polys just go high. Like, you put a displacement map or a height map on there and have it tessellate like 6 or 7 times in a scene, and everyone's okay with that. Yeah. That's fine because it looks awesome. But you can't do that in games, or you couldn't do that in games. And I think eventually you will be able to, and you'll be able to have scans with displacement on them and things like that. But I can see studios, and we were at Axis, and lots of studios are as well, just trying to find ways to integrate real time and Unreal and into their workflows and seeing how it can speed up things. So things like layout, things like lighting, I guess, setting a tone in the beginning are all way faster in Unreal. Yeah. Everything basically before you start completely arting something up, you can do in Unreal at like so many times the speed. You can do stuff like virtual camera work. So you can have, I could be working on a scene and a director could have a virtual camera, so like a VR kit, and he or she could be inside the scene with me, directing where they want this camera to be, setting up cameras while I'm also at the same time moving lights around. Like, you can do all of these things simultaneously in one Unreal scene at the same time, and that stuff just isn't possible anywhere else, without like an insane amount of custom tech, right? But this is like out of the box stuff that you can do in Unreal, and it's really exciting. There's just so much that you're going to be able to do with it, and it's so much faster. It's just that when they get that, like, that quality to match what you can push out of like a 1 hour, or I mean, renders can go up to like 5 hours of render, right? Or even higher than that, I suppose. As soon as they manage to get something like to 80% of that, I think it's going to be game on, really.
Coming back to my topic at the beginning, I'm just wondering why do you think there's the industry lacks diversity in key roles and general departments?
After I put that post on LinkedIn, I tried to think like long and hard about why I thought this was a thing. And until that guy had spoken to me and asked me how I felt about it, I had always thought about like, I'm the only Black guy in this studio many times. And every time it's just a natural thing, right? You go to a studio and you're like, there's maybe like 2 other people here that are Black too. And I'm probably going to never work with either of them. I mean, I'll see them when we go out for drinks, but like, I'm never going to have that like interaction with them at desks. And one thing that I find that's crazy is that the industry itself is super diverse, but I don't see many Black people at all in general. Like, there's tons of people from Spain. There's tons of people from France. There's people from all over the world in this industry, and they all group up and they all work they'll work with everyone else, but they'll go and have coffee or whatever with people that they know from their own countries and stuff like that. But when it comes to seeing other Black people from the UK, I just don't in most studios. And I guess, thinking back also about university, I can only speak from my experience, there weren't many in my class either. I had like one Black friend that was in my class, and he unfortunately didn't finish the course, so he never made it into the industry. So I see that there maybe aren't enough Black kids coming up from school going into college for this industry. And then, because the numbers of kids that go to university in the courses drops by, I mean, once in the first year, there's like, say, 80 people. In the second year, there's like 40 people. And then in the last year, only like 30 of them graduate, right? So if at the beginning, you only get 3 Black students in, by the time people come out, you will be lucky if there's one that gets through. And I don't know if it's just that this industry is never taken seriously in the Black community, or it's not taken seriously, but that just, it's not an option. I feel like I only wanted to do this because of my own want to do this.
Yeah.
It was never advertised to me as something I could do or something I should want to do. And I think that's something that maybe we need to do more. I think all I knew is when I was growing up and all my friends knew when we were growing up was that we didn't want to work a regular 9-to-5. And this industry has enabled me to do that. Sure, I work 9-to-5, but I do art all day, every day. I mean, pretty much everyone works a 9-to-5 that's not a millionaire. Like, there's a period of time you're going to need to sit down and do your work. Yeah. It's whether you enjoy doing that work or not that it makes the difference, right? Mm-hmm. And I, 90% of the days, maybe 95% of the days, enjoy doing what I'm doing and love doing what I'm doing. But I think we just need to advertise more that this is a completely viable option, and not just a viable option, but a really fruitful one. And one that creates massive opportunities. Like, I've not had to struggle for many years of my life. Like, when I was at university, my card got declined at McDonald's. Like, that was how I lived.
No,
but like, that's not life anymore. And that's, I owe that all to, one, my own dedication, sure, and the fact that I love doing what I do, but to the industry enabling me at every step of the way to be able to do what I love doing. So yeah, that's what I see. I've sat down and asked myself if I feel like there's any racism of any kind in the hiring process, or there has been in me coming up. And from my own perspective, I've not seen any conscious racism. Like, I've not seen anyone say, we're not going to hire that guy because this. Most of the people that have worked in recruitment have ended up being my friends. It's hard though, because I guess in this day and age, you always assume that some unconscious bias or racism exists, right? Yeah. But I think a large part of why we don't see Black kids coming up into the industry is that they just don't understand that this is a viable option.
A lot could come to backgrounds and like influence from parents as well as the, like, whoever is around us, I guess, community wise. Exposure as well. So I do agree.
What have you thought about the have you had any thoughts about
basically in terms of background wise, so usually I compare it to my background, so as an African person or having the knowledge of the African community, usually African parents don't tend to they tend to like guide or direct their kids into what the parents want them to do. And usually artistic roles in the African community is not common. It's not respected as much. So generally most of the kids or like the African community, they tend to go into different departments that are not creative or artistic. So I guess then that limits the amount of people that apply for those roles. And then as you said as well, like people dropping out, people not finishing their degrees as well, or not pursuing it once they come out of university. So then that decreases the numbers as well. But I've not had any issues in industry, but I have found myself usually being the only Black artist in the studios, especially because I freelance a lot and I go, pre pandemic wise, I was going around to different studios and I was finding myself to be the only or one of few Black artists. But it doesn't really affect me. It's just that usually when you see someone that looks like you, it's just the representation. You just connect and you feel there's a sense of I don't know how to explain it, but you feel like you're not alone. So, and I think that helps as well. But also, I think it also helps for people outside of the industry, the kids that are coming up, to see people like that look like themselves in certain roles and departments, so that they can aspire to that. I think there's a lot to be done. I guess there's a lot of maybe like us maybe going into colleges and secondary schools and literally just showing them what we do and just showing people what's possible and what they can do, I guess. So Yeah, there's a lot to do, but
yeah, I think that's a good idea for sure. I think going into colleges and just being that face, right, and saying, look, this exists.
Yeah,
you can be an artist. I think I agree with you in that. When I was growing up, like thinking about being an artist meant thinking that you're probably not going to make much money, and unfortunately, that just writes off a lot of the industry. But I mean, there are so many. It's not the same as being a portrait artist and trying to get commissions and hoping that people will buy your work in a gallery or something. It's work, right? It's solid work. Even as a freelancer, it's constant solid work. People need, studios need this work all the time to create these things. Yeah. And if you're good, they'll pay regardless of what you look like.
Yeah.
I think just showing kids that this is possible and that it's fun, I think is the main thing.
Yeah.
Would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. But yeah, not, I don't have too much to ask you, but I'm just wondering what's been your highlights for your career so far?
My highlights of my career so far?
Yeah.
What's my, it would be working on one of the projects that I can't talk about, unfortunately. So one of the last two projects that I got to work on at Axis, was like crazy once in a lifetime opportunity for me. Just because I played, I don't even know if I can say that much. I played it lots when I was a kid. So to get that opportunity to like,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Work on it in a studio was like, wow.
Yeah.
Because I knew I was never going to go to where it is because I love living in the UK so much.
Yeah, sure.
It's my home, right? That was probably my highlight. That, and I think once I first got to Rare after having that terrible experience in that huge studio and realizing like, this is it. This is what I wanted to do. I'm here with three of my friends and my leads are all asking me to creatively input on the project. This is what it's supposed to be. This is what I knew it was going to be. I'd hoped it was going to be like. I'd say those two.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, just to finish up, what advice would you give to anyone aspiring to be an environment artist or like,
My main point of advice always is to keep working on your portfolio. Keep making things and you'll grow exponentially as an artist. And don't do it for money. Don't do it for exposure. Don't do it for clout. Just make things that interest you. And eventually you'll look back at some point, you'll make a piece in like 5 or 10 years and you'll say, damn, that's pretty good.
Mm. Yeah.
Like you'll like it. You'll like every bit of it and you'll be happy with your journey. As soon as you start doing, like, I know so, and this isn't me knocking it, but I know so many people that have like started doing tutorials and selling them and trying to monetize doing art. And I think if you focus on that as you're coming up as an artist, sure, do that when you're experienced and you know what you're doing. But if you focus on that when you're coming up and when you're still trying to like solidify your skills and to find out who you are as an artist, then you're missing the point of doing art. And it's creative expression. So express creatively as often as possible. And if you're a 3D artist, mostly that means make pieces for your portfolio and do them for you. Do them because they interest you and people will love them.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, man, it's been great. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and your experience. It's just really cool.
Thank you. No, it's cool. Thank you for having me on. And I think we should chat some more about what we can do and see if we can get into some colleges or whatever. And just see what we can do to help some kids coming up. But thank you very much for having me on. It's been great talking to you.